Dr. William Luther Pierce, Toward a Healthy Society, 1997.
Hello. The mass suicide of 39 members of a flaky New Age religious cult in Southern California a couple of weeks ago has generated a great deal of media speculation and discussion of the cult phenomenon. There seems to be a general agreement that as we approach the end of this millennium, cult membership and cult activity are on the rise. Perhaps so. One thing on which we have better statistics than cult membership is the suicide rate, and that very definitely is up, especially among young people. So is the rate of drug abuse. So is the divorce rate. So is the incidence of mental illness. So is the percentage of citizens in prison for crime. Undoubtedly, some of the religious cults are growing now simply because the end of the millennium has a special significance for the less sophisticated elements of our society. But that has nothing to do with all of the other indicators of growing social pathology. The fact is that suicide rates and other indicators are up because more people are pessimistic about the future, unsure of the future, afraid of the future. There is a growing sense of instability and uncertainty and anxiety in our society. It drives some people to drugs or alcohol, some people to religious cults, and some people to suicide. It causes more marriages to break up, more people to have mental breakdowns. And as I said, none of this has anything to do with the calendar or with the Hale-Bopp comet. It has everything to do with the social and racial experiments which have been imposed on our society by liberal extremists and Jewish schemers during the past 50 years. The deliberate destruction of America's schools and cities by people hell-bent on equalizing the races is part of it. The flood of third world immigrants pouring into this country is part of it. The pervasive influence of television in our lives is part of it. The deliberate effort to globalize America's economy, accompanied by downsizing and the conversion to a service economy, is part of it. The destructive effects of government-sponsored feminism on the traditional relationship between men and women are part of it. All of these things, these social and racial experiments, have caused widespread social alienation. And from this alienation, 1,000 social pathologies have sprung. Now, when the media become interested in one of the consequences of these destructive social experiments, such as the activities of religious cults, they talk about what the cults are doing and how they recruit members and the problems parents have in trying to get their children out of the clutches of cults and so on. But they never talk about why so many people feel lost in American society today and so turn to a cult in order to be able to cope with life. They never talk about what has caused our society to fail so many people, to alienate so many people, to force so many people to desperate measures. They never talk about these things because that would expose to public scrutiny the destructive social experiments which have caused the social pathologies I've mentioned, the drug use, the suicides, and so on. And of course, the media bosses themselves have had a major role in these destructive experiments. I've spoken on earlier programs about the deliberately destructive role of the mass media in American society. I've talked about the psychology of liberalism, about what makes liberals do the crazy and destructive things they do. Today, though, instead of talking about the enemies of our society, the enemies of our people, let's just talk about our people and the sort of society that we need. You know, a society is a very complex thing. It is like a living organism. It responds to selective environmental forces, and it evolves. In past ages, it was the struggle of our people to survive, the competition of our people against other peoples, other races, which determined the nature of our society. Societies which functioned well survived. Societies which didn't function well perished. Historically, if some crazy liberal came along and were able to change all of the rules and structures in a society to suit some egalitarian fantasy of his, the society would sink like a rock and its people would perish. And that's what's happening to our society today, although it may not be apparent to us because of the time scale. After the experimenters finish their deadly work, it may take a society 200 years to disintegrate completely and sink out of sight. That's not long from a historical viewpoint, but it's long enough so that most of the people involved never realize what's happening to them. The society we had in Europe up until the end of the 18th century, or one may say the various national societies there, which really were very much alike when compared with any non-European society. This European society had evolved over a period of many, many generations of our people, and it had fine-tuned itself to our special nature. It had developed its institutions and its ways of doing things which suited us as a people and allowed us to form viable, efficient communities. And when we colonized North America and other parts of the world, we brought the essential elements of our society with us. And what were those essential elements? The first essential element was order. Everyone had a place in our society, whether he was the village blacksmith or the king, and he knew what that place was. He knew how he fitted in, what his responsibilities were, to whom he owed loyalty and respect, and to whom he in turn was obliged to provide guidance. It was a hierarchical society. There was no pretense that everyone was just as capable or just as creative or just as brave or just as suited for leadership as anyone else. People had social rank and social status and social authority commensurate with their social responsibilities and with their contributions to society. The master craftsman had a higher social rank than a journeyman, who in turn had a higher rank than an apprentice. The landowner with 1,000 acres who employed 100 workers on his land had a higher social rank than the man who owned only an acre and worked his land himself. But he also had more social responsibilities. He had a responsibility for the welfare and the discipline of his workers, for example. And the master craftsman had a responsibility to provide proper guidance for his apprentices and to uphold the standards of his craft. The fact that our society was orderly and people knew their place didn't mean that it was inflexible. The apprentice, through diligence and talent, could become a journeyman, and a journeyman might eventually become a master. And the man with only 1 acre might buy more land and hire workers if he used the land he already had in a productive way and accumulated savings. But the shirker, or the wastrel, or the incompetent could never expect that the government would tax his more successful neighbors in order to reward him for his failure and bring him up to their level. The second essential feature that our society had was homogeneity. Everyone had the same roots, the same history, the same genes, the same sensibilities. Or at least, there was enough genetic similarity. There was a close enough family relationship among the people so that people understood each other. A village, a province, a nation was like a large extended family. People felt a sense of kinship, a sense of belonging, a sense of loyalty and responsibility that extended to the whole society. This feeling of belonging, this sense of a common history and a common destiny, this sense of identity was the glue that held the society together and gave it its strength. And it gave men and women their individual strength too. Just knowing who they were, where they had been and where they were going made an enormous difference in their sense of personal security, in their ability to plan ahead and be reasonably confident of what the future held for them. This homogeneity and the consequent sense of family, of identity, was thousands of years in developing, just like the hierarchical order in our society. And we evolved along with our society. The type of society we had became imprinted on our genes. Of course, it wasn't a perfect society. It was full of problems and imperfections. We always were developing new technologies, for example, and our society didn't always have time to adjust itself to these innovations before even more innovations came along. But it was a society in which we were strong and confident and more or less spiritually healthy. You know, the opponents of social order and racial homogeneity will try to confuse the issue by pointing out that we have a longer lifespan today, that our infant mortality rate is much lower, that we don't have to work as hard to support ourselves, that we can buy all sorts of shiny gadgets that our ancestors couldn't, and so on. They want you to believe that these changes came about as benefits of the breakdown of order and the destruction of homogeneity, but they didn't. They are all the results of technological innovation. Our medical scientists learned how to control the diseases, which shortened our lives. Our scientists and engineers learned how we could work more efficiently. And they learned how to make new tools and new toys for us. Now, to be sure, not all of the degenerative changes in our society which have occurred in the past couple of centuries have been the consequence of the destructive efforts of the Jews and the liberals. The Industrial Revolution really was a huge shock to our traditional form of society. The Industrial Revolution took people off the farms and out of the villages and packed them into factory towns like sardines in a can. This was a great strain on the old order. The new relationship between factory owner and factory workers was not as healthy a one as had existed between landowner and workers on the land, nor was the new urban lifestyle as spiritually healthy as the village lifestyle. We were learning gradually to cope with some of the changes in our society which accompanied the Industrial Revolution. Our social order gradually was beginning to adjust itself when the liberals and the Jews launched their assault. Unrest and revolution were fomented from the latter part of the 18th century and throughout the 19th and 20th centuries. Egalitarianism, communism, democracy, equal rights, no responsibilities, welfare programs, feminism. The old order was drowned in blood. In France, the aristocrats and the landowners were butchered in response to the resentments which the liberals had stirred up among the rabble. Later, in Russia, the same process took place when the Jewish Bolsheviks finally gained the upper hand and butchered not just the aristocrats, but everyone who had worked a little harder and been a little more successful than the rabble. The kulaks, The small farmers and landowners were murdered en masse by the millions in order to equalize Russian society and destroy the last traces of the old hierarchical order. And into the social chaos of the 20th century, the enemies of our people were able to introduce their idea of racial equality alongside their idea of social equality. We were told that the descendants of our slaves are just as good as we are, maybe better, and so they should become our social equals. We should bring them into our schools and neighborhoods, and we should intermarry with them, and we should buy food stamps for them with our taxes, and we should give them preference in hiring and promotions. And we should open our borders to all of the non-white wretched refuse of the third world's teeming shores. They also are our equals, we are told. The more diversity, the better. Diversity is our strength, etc., etc. Blah, blah, blah. We were too disoriented and confused by the destruction of our social order to resist this poisonous propaganda. And so, here we are at the end of the 20th century. And there are some people who will try to convince you that things never have been better. We certainly have more equality and less order, more diversity and less homogeneity than ever before. And that obviously suits some people, in addition to the liberals and the Jews who have been pushing for these changes. Are these changes better for us? The suicide statistics and the drug statistics and the crime statistics and the divorce statistics and the mental illness statistics give us part of the answer. The statistics should help us keep our grip on reality when the Jewish media try to persuade us that we need more of the same poison they have been dishing out for so long. More equality, more chaos, more diversity. And we should be able to look into our own souls for the rest of the answer. We should know that we need again to have an ordered, structured society in which we all have a place and will be appreciated according to how effectively we fill that place. We should know that we need again to have a homogeneous society in which we can feel a sense of belonging. We should know that we need a society in which we have a sense of permanence and stability, not chaos and uncertainty. We should know that we need a society in which everyone strives for quality, not for an imaginary equality. We should know that in order to be spiritually healthy again, we need a society in which we can feel a sense of rootedness and responsibility rather than the aimless, wandering, rootless, cosmopolitan egoism which characterizes American society today. If we are honest with ourselves, we know that we all crave a healthy society again. We need it. But too many of us have let ourselves be persuaded by the enemies of our people that the type of society we need is no longer attainable. Our enemies tell us, we have destroyed the order in your society. We have made everyone equal, and you dare not try to take that equality away. That would be like trying to take candy away from a child. We have opened the candy store and told all the children that they can have as much as they want, and it's all free. They will all fight you if you try to change that, if you try to tell them that they must earn their candy. And our enemies grin in triumph when they see how that demoralizes and discourages so many of us. And they tell us, we have destroyed the homogeneity in your society. We have replaced your homogeneity with diversity. We have brought every non-white type on the face of the earth into your midst. We have brought them in by the millions, and we have forced you to mix with them. Now there's nothing you can do to restore your homogeneity. And again, they grin and say, what will you do? Will you try to root out every non-white and every mongrel and send them all away or get rid of them? You don't have the stomach for that. So you had better just learn to live with all of these non-whites and mongrels. Pretty soon you'll be a minority in your own land. And they gloat. And it is true, of course, that many of us do not yet have the stomach to do what must be done. And so the suicide rate and the divorce rate and the abortion rate will keep rising. The government will continue building more prisons. The cults will continue thriving. And the Jews and the liberals will keep telling us how wonderful everything is, how things have never been better, how we should appreciate all of the equality and diversity. But you know, all the while, the number of us who have the stomach to do what must be done will be growing. Our numbers are growing because more and more of our people are coming to understand that the only alternative is death. Death for our society, death for our children, death for our kind. What the Jews and liberals have done to our society is lethal. It cannot be sustained. Order and homogeneity, a sense of identity and belonging, are not just luxuries for us. They are essential. Without them, our society sickens and dies. The liberals may not be able to understand that. And the Jews, with their media propaganda, try to keep the rest of us from understanding it. But we can see the proof of it all around us. And we are determined to do whatever we must do to have once again a society for our own kind, a society to which we can really belong and feel a sense of responsibility to, a society in which we have a place and are appreciated if we fill that place well, a society based on order and quality and structure and commonality. We will have it. We will do what is necessary. Thanks for being with me again today.